You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. Edward P. Alexander, good morning, sir.
Sway with me. Good morning, Christy Simone.
Oh, I'm swaying with Ed Alexander.
Yeah, baby.
Today is our virtual happy hour day.
Well, that's right. Today at 4.
So all of you that have signed up, I will be, when I get back from the show, I will be emailing anyone who RSVP'd their Zoom login. And as I announced on Facebook today, I pray it is our first and last virtual happy hour.
Because of the circumstances.
You are correct. Yes. We would like to be back in person as soon as we're allowed to. So we still have to throw, I will tell you, the first event is the 11th anniversary party.
We owe you one. We're coming.
Yeah.
We got a really, 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 do my Ed Sullivan here, really big shoe today. In any second, we're going to get a call from Mark Morgan, who is the Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection. And there's lots of stuff going on in the COVID-19 world in the U.S.-Mexico-Canadian borders. So we're going to talk about that. And then we have Congressman Schweikert. Oh, the sports intern's calling. Do we have Timothy Bowen? He's making his debut. He is a candidate for Oro Valley Town Council at 8 o'clock. And then it's actually an author, now that we're in graduation world, talking about, it's called By the Avocado Toast. It's about basically going to school in the college in the most financially smart way possible. So, if such things are possible, as we like to say. So, Ed Alexander is making it happen with the commish right now. I will tell you, yesterday I did do some, had a great lunch with Billy Beard over at Just Kebab. And Arash is doing a great job. He's got tables out on the patio that we sat up, socially distancing 7.7 feet away. So that was great. And then I had to get my car fixed. Oh, I had to get my brakes put in by my boy Pete at Desert Auto. And so then my wife and I are like, oh, we don't feel like cooking. So I did pick up carne asada burritos yesterday at Taco Rustico on Oracle and Grant, and Juan is kicking butt. They were excellent. Love his salsas. The lady at the front counter is amazing. So kudos to Juan and the Taco Rustico guys and girls for the really, really good work. Before this show's over, we are going to read through the changes that the Pima County, well, King Huckleberry, as he likes to be known around the House and the office, what changes they're going to vote on at an emergency meeting, which I believe is at 2 o'clock today. And I do have a little bit of reaction from restaurateurs. And then Dan Shearer did actual reporting. Is he on or are we waiting?
Calling me right back on another phone, that's all.
Not a problem. Dan Shearer, because he's like a real reporter. I don't know if you guys know this, okay? Dan Shearer wrote an article about how it's called, Valadez told Ducey they plan to go beyond state guidelines. So it's a letter from Valadez to Ducey before they had their stupid meeting on the 20th, 19th. And then there's the response from Ducey in it. And we'll get to that before that's over. So we're going to definitely break that on. The CDC changes its mind again on how this corona thing is, quote, transmitted. Thank you very much. Can't make this stuff up, kids, as we like to say. What else do we got here today? We're going to do a Derek Hunter piece. Liberals would rather people die than have hydroxychloroquine work. We'll get to that before it's all over. We have the New York Post op-ed that says, liberate New York now. And I'll give you something from my buddies in New York on that. Senator Kamala Harris, who thought she was a presidential hopeful, has a resolution that about free speech that is, that's the word I want to look, pathetic. Then there's a group called Global Strategy Group, which is a Democrat polling company. And I'll give you the guy who's the partner and managing director what his background is politically. And they did a poll of whoever they wanted to say
hello,
if people are fine or not with the reopening of their particular state. We'll do that. We'll talk about Bobby Robbins' press conference yesterday at the U of A about reopening campuses. We got to talk about COVID-19 surcharges. Lots of stuff to do. 790-2040 is the phone number. It's a Thursday. We're going to go right to the Ed Alexander live line.
Big live line.
Big live line.
Yeah.
And we have Customs and Border Protection Act. I can talk today. Customs Border Protection Acting Commissioner Mark Morgan. Mark, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Yeah, that's a mouthful, isn't it?
Jeez. Especially, it's like, you know, this is my first 3 minutes out of the box, so I haven't even warmed up yet. So, but welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the border. Right as we were going into, give me like border status right before we went into full blown COVID actions, and where are we at now, right now, with the Canadian and Mexican borders?
Yeah, so actually, you know, that's a great question, a great way to set it up, because I think it's important we put it in the context, because we, this administration, this president, CBP, the men, hardworking men and women on the front lines, for the previous 10 months before COVID, we had just a network of initiatives and policies and a lot of hard work that really reduced overall apprehensions by over 70% pre-COVID. Our in-custody numbers had gone from, you know, 20,000 to about 3,500. We had absolutely made tremendous progress in the previous 10 months before COVID. And then COVID hits. And so what's really important is, really pre-COVID, you know, one of our focuses was on immigration enforcement. But then as COVID hit, and this is what's missed by some people, is, and again, this isn't our first rodeo, so this isn't our first infectious disease. That threat and that risk has always been there. We just haven't got as much attention because until really COVID, obviously. And so what we do is we have to shift some of our mindset to back to the public health risk with respect to the borders. It's a complex set of threats on our borders. And so that's exactly what we've done. And again, this administration has given us a couple of authorities under Title 19, the non-essential travel, and then the Title 42, the CDC authorities of those who enter illegally. We're able to remove them quickly rather than bring them in our facilities. It's been a game changer on the public health side.
So what is going on at each border? Because what we did is we said only essential commercial stuff can come through, correct? Is that where we're at right now?
Well, it's a combination. So, and that's another good point, too, because there's been a false narrative out there that says, hey, we shut the borders down. That's just not true. Look, this president, this administration has been committed since day one, even in the midst of this global pandemic, that we had to keep commercial trade flowing. The supply chain had to keep going, both on a northern and southern border. So that's never stopped. That's continued to flow. What we did, though, is on the vehicular traffic and the pedestrian side, both on a northern and southern border, for non-essential travel. So if you were coming across to go shopping, to do those kind of non-essential travel-related endeavors, that's what we shut down. That's what Title 19 does, is now limiting people coming across for essential reasons only. And that's made a tremendous... Look, right after that, within a few days, the numbers dropped by 400,000 per day. Both on a northern and southern border, 400,000 less people are coming across the borders every single day. That's absolutely an effective containment and mitigation strategy.
So from our side, right, so the county that we're in, Pima County, which is definitely has a whole bunch of border, but we rely on Mexicans spending money in Pima County as part of our financial viability. The last time it's like an easy $1 billion economic impact from Mexican shoppers. So what has to happen over the next so many months as we start figuring out how do we let people to come in, that kind of visitor to America, how do we figure that, what's that equation look like?
Again, you're very well informed and hitting all the right questions. In fact, I just had a conversation yesterday with local leaders throughout the Arizona border population, and that's the challenge, right? Just like we're trying to do in the United States, balance that public health, that really real public health risk, you know, against the open up the economy. And that's exactly what we're trying to do on the border as well. And so we're working with the CDC, we're working with medical professionals, we're watching what's going on in Mexico from a public health standpoint, as well as the Western Hemisphere, and balancing that out in the need to continue to open up the economy, but yet still protect American citizens.
What's the world of COVID look like in Mexico? What reports are you getting?
So that's an essential part of this too, and that's what's really important for your listeners. It's not just about what's going on the U.S. side. It's about what's going on in Mexico and well beyond in the Western Hemisphere. Last year alone, we apprehended people from 148 different countries last year, all of them coming through the southwest border, many of them coming into your cities across the border. So it's not just about what's happening in Mexico. It's well beyond. But what we're seeing in Mexico, the cases are going up, the deaths are going up, related to COVID. So there's a very real public health crisis that's going on. So while we're doing some really good things in the United States here, taking precautions, social distancing, trying to start to slowly, methodically open up the economy, we've got to be careful that we're not then introducing additional COVID from Mexico and beyond. So it's a balance that we've got to work together to push forward, to make sure we're balancing that public health risk with opening up the economy. We're working with Mexico, we're working with the healthcare providers, we're working with the local officials to do just that.
790-2040, we're talking to Mark Morgan. He is acting Border Customs and Border Protection Commissioner. And, of course, we're talking about the state of the border during what's going on in the craziness of the world. How does inspections for commercial stuff coming through change? What's happened in that world during COVID?
The way we've always done it. So, and that's what is important. I'm glad we're talking about this now. Is again, like I said a minute ago, you know, the threat from infectious disease has always been there from a CBP perspective, from a border perspective. That threat has always been there. So we're doing the same thing that we did pre-COVID. When we go and we check somebody, we're not just checking to make sure that they're abiding by all the trade regulations. We're not just inspecting to make sure they don't have illicit cargo, contraband, or drugs, but we're also checking them from a public health perspective too. We've always done that. We did that pre-COVID. We're doing that during COVID as well. And again, that's really that good, robust balance. And I keep saying, you know, border security is national security, but it's well beyond public safety. It really is about public health as well. That's part of our job.
So if we have a 400,000 reduction of people coming through the border, is that's every day?
Every single day, and that's both on the northern and southern border. The majority of that, though, is on the southern border.
How do you deploy your officers at that point? How does that look? How does the redeployment of CBP officers look if there's 400,000 less humans coming through every day? What happens? How does that change the mission?
So a couple of things, and again, it's a spot on question. And so one of you know, from our seat, public health is obviously a priority, but so is the health of our workforce. And so that's something that we're constantly looking from the very beginning. We're continuing to monitor, we're continuing to adjust as appropriate. And so we've done some of that. As the flow goes down, then there's not necessarily a need to have those personnel in those areas. So there are some POEs that we have narrowed down the lanes. We've reassigned those personnel to other areas on the border that's appropriate to help with other public health and public safety concerns along the border. So it's a very kind of complex, multifaceted challenge on the border that we're constantly monitoring and have to shift constantly.
This is not COVID related, but at one of our Nogales port of entry at the Mariposa, there was a lot of infrastructure put in where it expanded the amount of lanes that commercial and non-commercial could come through. But it was always a problem because Congress was doing continuing resolutions that we'd never had it properly staffed because they weren't giving you guys the money to do that. Is that a situation in other places? Is that fixed? Are you seeing that in other places, that dynamic?
Yes, we are. And that's a constant challenge as well, is the infrastructure. In fact, I was just talking to local leaders about that as well. So we know that you know, commercial trade is significant. The supply chain issues are significant. Wait times are significant. And again, that's also a multifaceted challenge as well. One, having the right infrastructure, you know, i.e. having the right lanes, the number of lanes to help facilitate that travel. Also having the right technology so that we can more efficiently and effectively do our job from a public health, public safety perspective of those goods and items that are coming in to protect the American people, as well as having the right level of personnel to be able to facilitate all that. That's a challenge. It's always a balance, and a lot of that does come down to funding, which we're always fighting for more.
One of our regular listeners, Barney, wanted me to ask you, can you ask Commissioner Morgan about other diseases that are or have been coming across the border in recent years?
Yes, so that's another great question. So, look, Ebola, H1N1, SARS, tuberculosis, measles. I could go on. You know, these are all infectious diseases that we have seen over the years. Tuberculosis, measles is something that we see on a regular basis. And that's why I say that I hope this really serves as kind of a wake-up call to really facilitate the discussion that when we say border security is national security, again, it's not just about public safety. It's not just about immigration enforcement. It's about all of those plus public health. That's a very real threat to our country. And so I hope, as we're talking about things are going to look different in the United States after COVID, I hope we're having the same discussions along the border. We've got to have policies and other initiatives that are in place to help us do our job from a public health perspective as well.
Well, Mark, appreciate the good information today. Let's try to keep this semi-regular as we move through this, because, again, this Mexico-U.S. border is so important to Tucson security-wise and economically, and I love that you came on today.
Absolutely. Keep it going. We fully understand both the public health, safety, and economic aspect of all this. It's a complicated, challenging set of threats and conditions, but we're working hard to make that happen.
All right, man. Thanks for everything. We'll see you soon, okay?
Okay, you bet. Bye-bye.
There he is, Acting Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, Mark Morgan. Tomorrow, we will have Secretary of the Interior Bernhardt on tomorrow.
What?
Keeping the wake-up interview train moving along. So,
straight from D.C.
What happened? The light show got you all crazy over there?
Oh, it's awesome.
Okay.
We just got a quick minute here. Just want to tell everyone, so you know, we know the modelers have gotten nothing right here, right? As Matt Neely has fallen in love with my Miss Cleo, right? You know,
right.
The psychic, right?
Yes.
All right. He's using it everywhere. God bless him, right? When anyone brings up modeling, him and I are like, Miss Cleo's better than the modelers, right?
Yeah.
So then we had our friends at the CDC, and they're a special group there too, right? Furchy, Bauk,
WHO, Furchy, CDC.
I put Burks and Fauci together. I just called them Furchy. I'm going to do that. Furchy. You know, they had Bradgelina for Brad Pitt and Angelina. Yeah, I'm going to call them Furchy. So we got Furchy and Redfield. Okay. Sounds like a bad law firm. Anyway, so now it seems like they've changed their guidelines from early March to say it may be possible to spread corona from contaminated surfaces. It now includes surfaces and objects under the section that details way in which corona does not readily transmit. So now we're saying it doesn't really transmit that much on a surface.
Mm.
Just to confuse everyone a little bit more. Sports intern coming up. All right, we got to get to the phones. Ryan Larson, the sports intern, who was born 38 years after this song came out. Ryan, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chris. Why are you telling everybody how old I am?
Well, you know,
old now.
You're an old guy now at 19 or whatever the hell you are.
22.
Go, man. All right.
Oh my God, that is, time is going fast. Larson's 22.
I've been doing this for 5 years, Chris.
It's so funny.
Wow,
that's 5 years.
Wow,
son of a nutcracker. You know, it's funny you say that because I was looking at a picture of like one of your first appearances in studio. And I'm like, Larson looks like he's about 12 in this picture. And look at you now.
Yeah, that was me at 17. And now I actually look like I'm 17.
Thank you very much. Hey, when you get older, you'll appreciate the idea that you look younger than you really are. So,
I'm already fine with it. So.
How's the new job at the bank? You okay?
Yeah, it's going great. It's a good way to make money, and I can actually have something to do during quarantine, so I can't complain.
Thank you. You guys are still tell me the state of quarantine in Utah.
So Utah does it by color codes, and so we're to code yellow, which is one step away from green, and return for normal. And so now up to 50 people are allowed to gather together, though a lot of places are still being very cautious or not willing to open, especially restaurants. Some of them still refuse to open their actual dining sit-down areas and keeping it to drive-through and takeout. But things are getting closer to returning to normal, but it could still be months before we actually get back to green and to everything being open and operating as planned.
So let's talk about sports. I know we're not going to get too deep because I'm just telling you I get to watch live German soccer on Saturday made me mildly excited after 2 months of nothing.
Of course. Yeah, we actually have stuff to watch now. It's going to be great.
Now, let me ask you, I was just looking at the COVID deaths in Utah. They've had 88.
Right.
So the idea that you guys are still under some sort of a lockdown, I would say, is cute. But now let's get back to sports. So I heard like Fox News, like some of them, like Fox Sports, right? They're like, sports is back this weekend. I'm like, what is it? And they go, NASCAR 700. And I go,
yeah.
And I'm like,
600.
And what? I don't. Who cares?
I'll be there.
And I'm like, that means sports isn't back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what this has taught me is that if I still don't want to watch NASCAR in the middle of a pandemic with no sports, I'm never going to watch NASCAR. That's what I learned this week.
Thank you.
It's not going to happen.
Where are we at in so let's talk about, so baseball is, we're here in July 4th?
Yeah, so baseball, we're here in the beginning of July. They're hoping to have a plan in place by the beginning of June, so that they can start an abbreviated spring training again, get players back into shape and back to their home facilities so that they can ramp up to start the season at the beginning of July. But rather than – baseball is now coming up with this plan, but rather than it being just about health and safety of the players and making sure everything follows guidelines from health officials, what this has turned into is a labor dispute for baseball, and it's turning into a battle for money because the players want to get paid their full salaries. They don't want a salary cap put in place for the season, while the owners are saying that they're already facing huge losses in revenue and in profit, and so they want the players to take a lesser cut of their revenue for the rest of the season. And players just do not want to go for that. Players in baseball specifically have no trust of their owners, for good reason, based on the history of Major League Baseball. But because of that, they don't want to make any concessions in the form of salary and revenue sharing, because that is what baseball players have fought the whole history of baseball for, which is to have the freedom to make as much money as they want. And so we're coming to a labor dispute in baseball, where rather than baseball being shut down because of the coronavirus, there's a real chance baseball is going to be not come back because of a labor dispute and because of a lockout. Mm-hmm. And so this is a problem for baseball. They need to come back, one, because the players, there's a startling number of them who live paycheck to paycheck still, despite making millions of dollars. The owners would face catastrophic losses. Baseball can't afford to have multiple franchises bankrupt during the season. And then you think back to 1994, the last time baseball had a major lockout that canceled the World Series. That was catastrophic. Baseball lost tons of fans. They lost tons of revenue. It really took decades for it to recover its reputation from that 94 lockout. And now if baseball says we're not coming back over money in the middle of the pandemic, that's going to be worse than 1994. This will be worse for baseball's reputation than anything it's had in the past. And it could take another generation before fans recover from this and are willing to love and trust baseball again.
Another sport I don't get excited about, but it is one of the big three, is NBA basketball. I was talking to maybe Greg yesterday here at the station. They're going to do a playoff. They're looking at a playoff scenario for summer. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, the NBA is still trying to salvage its postseason. That's the main goal right now. And so what the NBA is throwing around is they want to have guidelines in place as well for June 1st. June 1st is kind of the deadline for basically every professional league right now to figure things out. And what the NBA is considering doing is having the playoffs in just one or two locations. for just the rest of the playoffs. Rather than teams traveling and playing in home arenas, they'll just pick a location or two to play the playoffs in and get the playoffs done so that they can have a champion for this season, so that they can generate more playoff revenue. And what they're looking at right now is either playing in Orlando at like Walt Disney World. ESPN has a huge sports complex down there. They could conceivably play there, or they could go to Vegas, which, because Vegas is basically completely shut down still, and there's a few arenas there that they, in the casinos and the surrounding areas, that they could still do the playoffs in. And so that's what the NBA is thinking. The NBA wants to get back because it's a huge, there's huge economic incentive for this, because if there's no sports, this is why baseball needs to come back. If there's no sports, if one of the major leagues comes back and is playing any sort of games, there's going to be a huge spike in viewership. There's going to be a huge bump in popularity for that. So the NBA is trying to get back and at the very least be able to say that they had an actual champion for this season.
I think football will be fine by the time we get there. So I'm not worried about football. Tell me about Ben Roethlisberger getting a haircut during a shutdown.
Wow, I love the coronavirus, because this is the type of news that we've come to, is talking about Ben Roethlisberger getting a haircut. But yeah, basically, he went and he got a haircut, and he said that he wouldn't shave or get a haircut until he was able to throw an NFL pass again. And then after 8 months of that, Roethlisberger quit and decided to actually get a haircut. And now the Philadelphia governor is angry at Ben Roethlisberger for this. It's very confusing, and it's the type of weird news we get in the coronavirus, where an NFL player gets a haircut after 8 months.
That's
and then
big
the
news.
Governor is coming after him. It's big news.
So here's the thing. Who's bigger, the governor or Ben Roethlisberger in Pennsylvania?
Most people care more about Ben Roethlisberger.
Thank
and
you.
It's not even close.
I guess the other thing, are any other sports coming back on the horizon? I saw that the NCAA's approved three sports. What is that, like basket weaving? I mean, what is that?
So the NCAA approved for players to start coming back to campus to complete voluntary workouts over the summer, and they're allowed to start coming back in June. And this is the NCAA trying to get football to happen on time, because conservative estimates for if college football doesn't happen is that losses among Power 5 schools will be in total close to $4 billion, and that Power 5 schools will lose close to $62 million on average, which could potentially bankrupt some athletic programs. So for the NCAA, they're trying to okay players to come back to campus. They'll still have to go through a 14-day quarantine before they're allowed to practice and everything. But that's the start. The closest sport to actually happening right now is golf. They have tournaments scheduled in June. They'll be played without fans, but they would be played close to normal with a large field of players. And so golf would be the first one to come back, and then we'll see what the NCAA does as things get closer. Because the problem with the NCAA coming back is that there are so many states and so many different guidelines going around and different schools within each state that it's going to be hard to come up with a consensus approach on how to bring back players, bring back football specifically. And so that could be a problem going forward, but it looks like they're going to try and get college football to happen on time, because if not, that's going to completely change the landscape of college sports for the foreseeable future if they lose out on that money and don't get to play football this year.
Well, how many of these other sports rely on football to pay their bills? You know,
athletic programs in general. If there was no ticket revenue this season in college football, there are only two athletic programs that probably wouldn't face a major deficit, and that's Georgia and Texas A&M, because they receive so much booster money. And so every other program, just by losing out on ticket revenue, even if they got the TV revenue, they wouldn't be able to survive. The athletic programs would be cutting sports left and right.
And then my last question is, I've avoided listening to any of my sports talk guys because it's just depressing. So what is sports talk doing? You know, the ESPNs, the Mad Dogs, what are they doing out there during this time?
Well, you see what ESPN's doing. ESPN got a huge bump from the Last Dance documentary, the 10-part series on the Bulls and Michael Jordan. But basically what they're doing is turning towards nostalgia, replaying old games, discussing the greatest teams of each decade, or redoing the NFL draft or the NBA draft from various years and saying who would go number one now, who would go number two.
Sure.
And that's kind of what sports has come to, because they don't have a choice. They have to generate content still. But when there's no live content, you rehash old arguments, you replay old events just to try and bring fans back in on a form of nostalgia or just looking for some sort of entertainment, even if it's in the form of a replay of sports. And that's kind of what they're doing right now. And it, honestly, and then you spend a lot of time talking about the coronavirus. You spend a lot of time speculating when it's going to come back, how to do it correctly. And that's kind of what we come to. Or you start talking about other things like TV, which is what some other sports podcasts and stuff have started to do, is discuss a lot of TV. So that's where we're at right now.
Listener Lori just messaged me. Let's just have baseball bring in the B and C teams. Screw the gold diggers.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows. Rich owners and rich players fighting each other. That's not sport. That's
well,
great.
The problem is, you'll see this, is that fans tend to side with the owners in the long run because they side with the logo more than with the players. Even if the players have some justification for wanting to, you know, make their money, because if not, it just goes to the owners. But fans are going to side with the owners in the long run. So if baseball doesn't come back, this is going to be really bad for the reputation of the players.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Larson, good job as always. 5 years of Ryan Larson. It's gone so fast. In a good way.
Yeah, it's weird to talk about. It's weird it's been that long.
Well, you're doing a great job as always.
I really love doing it.
Like I said, I'll take you against any paid interns, or actually any paid employees of any other sports program in America right now. So.
Well, there aren't a lot of paid employees left in sports right now. So.
Let me do my Andrew Dice Clay right there. Oh! So, Ryan, keep counting that money. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Chris. Talk to you soon.
There he is, Ryan Larson, best damn sports intern in America. U.S. Congressman Swikert coming up at 7 o'clock. We come back. Kamala Harris and I don't know, this little free speech thing going on. We'll talk about that. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. 6:52 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson. Ed, I emailed you a quick YouTube clip that we're going to play before the end of this segment.
Okay.
It's an easy one. We're going to play it right from the beginning. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to my amigo Lawrence on line. Can I say amigo? I think I can. I feel like it's appropriation. Yeah. But Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Sí, we can be amigos.
That's Lawrence at BustosMedia.com.
No, it's
absolutely
not.
Absolutely. You know what? You know, I was listening to Ryan Larson talking about how the baseball players want to get all their full salary and, you know, the owners are losing money. You know, really, where the fans lose it is for everyday people like me, you know, my daughter, and everybody else who's lost their job. Where they get, they'd like to get their money back. I have, you know, I told my wife, I said, you know, during this time I'm losing because we're running low on money sometimes. I'm like, we're losing money because I'm not at school. Teaching, tutoring 2 days a week, getting paid to be a paid tutor 2 days a week.
Right.
You know, so you're losing money. So why are these millionaires, do we get to hear them whine? This is why they lose fans. Who, you know, it's like everybody's sitting there, you know, are you serious, buddy?
Well, it's human nature in these things, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone feels like
right.
There's this moment of leverage or they're getting taken advantage of. And then, you know, all their agents get crazy and this is where you're at, so.
You know, they need to listen to Dave Ramsey and be sure they stash some cash. That way they can survive.
As Dave would say, weird is good.
Yeah, and this is where, I mean, this is where the fans lose it. The everyday person who goes out to the ball game, they lose it because no, there's no empathy there, no understanding. What do you mean? You can't go on living less when everybody else has to?
That's why.
That's
I mean, there's some people in baseball getting paid 20-something million a year. Can you make it 1 year on 18 mil a year?
Exactly. Or maybe 17 or even 15.
Well, Lawrence, you know? Thanks for the good call as always, man. Have an amazing day, sir.
Thanks, you too.
See you this weekend. 6:54 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. So I said that, you know, Miss Cleo, the psychic,
mm-hmm.
right, has had better accuracy than the modelers from Imperial College, John Hopkins, and University of Washington. So I got a tweet from a former Wake Up Tucson guest who's pissed.
What?
All right. So believe it or not, Ed, play the video just so you guys remember. She was on the show a few years ago. Dionne Warwick's pissed at me now.
Ooh. It's a paid commercial presentation of Inflammation Incorporated.
That's right, she was.
Today, you'll find out what Dionne Warwick has to say about the Psychic Friends Network.
I think that anyone watching this show can benefit from speaking to a psychic.
That's
Meet
true.
Psychic to the Stars, Linda Georgian.
Oh.
hear what one of our psychics had to say about daytime TV's hottest couple.
Is this going to be the end of our relationship?
I mean, oh, my God!
Ultimately destroy our... I asked her.
You asked her that?
Yeah.
Meet other soap opera stars who called the Psychic Friends Network.
They all have 80s hair.
So Dion texted me and said, hey, you're giving Miss Cleo, and she says that her psychic friends kick Miss Cleo's butt on accuracy. So I want to make it cool with Dion. All right.
So who's even better than that? Yeah.
Can I say this? Miss Cleo and Linda Georgian, Psychic Friends Network, her hair in this thing is amazing. I mean, the word volume doesn't do it justice.
80s.
Okay.
So yeah.
Linda Georgian as a psychic and Miss Cleo are still better than Niall Ferguson of Imperial College and some of these other folks. So can we be freaking happy here? All right. You're both better than the coronavirus modeler. So, Dion, that's what friends are for.
Oh.
Keep smiling.
So we can have a barbecue this weekend and talk about tracing and modeling. This is going to be a great weekend.
All right, let's get the holidays today.
Let's
real
do
quick.
It.
We got National Strawberries and Cream Day,
mm-hmm.
National Waiters and Waitresses Day.
It is. It's Waitstaff Day today.
They're getting there.
Hopefully, some of them getting back to work.
I also. Again, like I said, I think some of these owners are learning that as their competitors start opening up with dining, they're going to see some of their revenues drop in certain spots, and like, I got to open the dining room and get
yeah.
back. It's National Memo Day. No one likes a memo. That's why you people who keep doing your passive aggressive crap with emails, all you're doing is memos that are digital. So please stop. It's Brown Baguette Day. It's American Red Cross Founders Day.
There you go.
It's National Hummus Day.
Oh.
Best hummus in town is still Shish Kebab House.
Shish Kebab House.
I like all the other ones out there. Zatar and what's my other? Zaina, all my Z's, right? But Reina at Shish Kebab House, best hummus kind of ever. Sorry, kids. And then it's Ascension Thursday. We're already at 40 days after Easter. After all this, it's been like a blur at Alexander.
Crazy, and then it's going to be Memorial Day in the middle of May. It's crazy, crazy.
Holiday birthdays today: Fats Waller, great pianist. I can't stand listening to him sing though when he sings. Trust me, I'm a 40s Junction guy. I know all about it. Ron Isley from the Isley Brothers. That's right.
It's
up Ed's.
We'll get a little of that.
We got that. Some basis.
Leo Sayre, dude. I
know.
Love you more than I can say.
Now, of course, Leo comes up because of that Justin Sayre's guy. I always refer to him as Leo Sayre, the guy who writes for the Arizona Daily Star. What else? Actually, a little tidbit on Leo Sayre.
Okay.
He co-wrote Giving It All Away, which gave Roger Daltrey his first solo hit of his career.
There you go. You thought he was just a clown. You thought. Mr. T.
It is Mr.
Pity the Fool.
Pity the Fool.
Birthday.
So best Mr. T line. A lot of good ones in Rocky III, right? And the sportscaster goes, and Clubber, what's your forecast for the fight with Rocky Balboa? And he just goes, pain.
Ooh. Ooh.
Congressman Schweikert's coming up next. And we're going to talk about perverse incentives. We're going to talk about Kamala Harris putting a bill through the Senate that you can't call the flu woohoo flu,
yes.
Kung flu.
Anything
you're not allowed to do it anymore.
You can't say China. Yeah.
Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice.